Please be advised, there are occasional cuss words in these episodes. So now you know.
Okay. So you have the sniffles?
Yes, I have the sniffles.
Oh. Why do you say it ironically or mockingly? Mocking my use of the word.
It's pretty condescending, sniffles. Don't you think?
What would you like?
Oh, do you have the sniffles?
What would have been more appropriate?
Ew.
Are you sick?
I'm sick.
Are you feeling poorly?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Episode 7, Other Together. In this episode, your hosts Steve and Mal hurtle from point A to point B, briefly considering professional wrestling careers real and imaginary, before examining the universal experience of feeling like the other, source of pain, gothic literature, and wonder. Strap in for The Ride to Redacted.
Go.
To redacted.
Redacted word.
Redacted word bound.
Okay. Listeners.
Friends.
Friends.
Enemies.
Friends, enemies,
lovers.
Listeners. Lovers?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know we were including them.
I mean,
people that I've broken up with.
Well.
Or that have broken up with me.
Well.
You're all here. And know that you are loved and held.
And just know that the murderer is in this very room.
It's in the building. You know, one thing I like the most about this series that we're putting together is that we discover things on the way. I mean, it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Just objectively.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Improv.
Right. One thing that just sort of randomly came up when I saw my mom yesterday, it occurred to me this could be a theme. Cheating here, but maybe we'll discard it or modify it. The road not taken.
Mm-hmm.
So it occurs to me that you, at the age of 28,
mm-hmm,
I mean, you have many roads that you could still take. It's not over yet for you.
Thank God.
Right. But I mean, for me, there are some things that I'm probably not going to be doing.
Skydiving?
Skydiving? Yeah, skydiving. I should have done it when the knee was ready.
Yeah.
Skydiving, mud wrestling. Never really wanted to do that.
I don't either. It sounds like sensory hell.
On the other hand, my mother had a good friend who was a writer and a female wrestler. Not a mud wrestler, per se.
I'm sure that she knew how to get down and dirty with it, though.
Probably. I'm going to try to remember her name. She's still around. She lives in New York.
She's still wrestling?
Well, she's in her 90s.
So, probably, yeah.
Probably. Do you ever stop?
Just whenever really stop being a wrestler.
Right.
Do you ever just put your arm around somebody and you go, like, I could, you know, I could just take them down right now.
Probably other 90-somethings are, you know, I could take her.
I know Clarice has that trick knee. That hip replacement?
Yeah, I'm going to go for that.
She'll be an easy mark.
And just take her down from the left side.
Down to the mat.
Okay. 90-year-old. I think that back in the day, they were known.
You have to have good insurance for that program.
I,
I wasn't thinking of going there, but no, back in the day, I think they were known as lady wrestlers.
Okay.
You know, since...
That sounds very elegant.
Yeah.
Or pretty homoerotic, I guess.
Okay.
Don't laugh so hard when we're going on to another.
Somebody please breathe for me. Listeners, chime in with your breathing tips.
You need to sit on a little stool in the corner while your coach squirts water into your mouth or something. Is that boxing?
Rosalind Drexler.
Okay.
He just blurted and blurted out.
What was her wrestling name?
That was her name.
Oh.
I think
I'm disappointed. What would your wrestling name be? Because I have mine.
Okay, let's start with yours.
Okay, mine requires a certain nerdy knowledge of...
everything.
Bookmaking and rezo. Like, if you know a certain amount about, like, you know, bookmaking or archiving or whatever supplies, then you'll get it. But...
Okay.
Mine would be the bone folder.
The bone folder?
Yes.
That's good.
A bone folder is a tool that's used in, like, rezo printmaking or bookmaking or archival, like, whatever. It's a flat tool made of bone that you use to make creases in leather and paper.
Okay.
Yeah. Wait, what would your wrestling name be?
My wrestling name? The first name that comes to mind is really stupid. Okay. Steve.
Well.
You can't do that.
It's not that imaginative.
No.
But if it's good enough for Rosalind.
Well, but Rosalind, I mean, I think she...
What if you gave yourself another normal name?
Another?
Like Gary.
No, I don't think it would be Gary.
But you see what I'm going for.
A cousin Gary.
Right.
So that would be confusing.
Okay.
I'd get a call from Gary. What's up with your wrestling name?
Yeah, Gary Schwartz is your wrestling name.
Okay.
That would be bold, I think.
Okay. Would I give him a heads up or just...
Nah.
Burst onto the... What is up?
Yeah, you would send him 1,000 emails inviting him to your wrestling matches.
What are the Mexican wrestlers are known as what?
Luchadores.
Luchadores. So when I begin my fabulous luchador career in Mexico.
Right.
And then...
I think that's the best place to start a luchador career, personally.
Yeah, probably. Maybe the only place. I mean, do they have it in Norway? Luchadors in Norway.
Yeah, but they're luchadors. With an umlaut.
At least one umlaut.
Yeah.
Picturing a copy editor. It's or like a head... editor-in-chief. It's like, this is pretty good. I think we'll take this entire piece as is.
Except for
the umlaut. Okay. The writer who submitted this lengthy piece to the New Yorker says, no, I'm not taking it out.
Yeah, leave the umlaut or I walk.
I don't care. Yeah, because I could always fall back on my luchador career. Yeah, true. The geese? Are you,
yeah, the
or
geese.
The plane?
Oh, the geese.
I wonder how they feel about the plane.
They're like, no, it's just a big goose.
Yeah. Poser.
Poser.
How about the wrestling name Goose Poser? No?
No.
No, it doesn't
come. I'm not feeling it.
You're not feeling it?
It sounds more like...
Does it mean
like a nickname that would be in, like... You know, one of Bertie Wooster's friends.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a topical reference our audience will understand and appreciate.
In a heartbeat. In a New York...
Minute
divided by 60.
A New York second?
Exactly.
Okay. And,
yeah. New York minute is long in this context.
Okay.
All right. Bertie Wooster. P.G. Woodhouse.
P.G. Woodhouse.
Did you know that there was a moment where P.G. Woodhouse, for all his lightheartedness, ended up being co-opted by the Nazis? He was sort of held under house arrest, if by house we mean couldn't leave the country.
Uh-huh.
He had gone to Germany, the Nazis came to power, or maybe were in power, I don't know. He was just there, you know, do-do-do, like not thinking about it. And then they said, all right, British person, you can't leave. And you're going to have to go on the radio and say at least not bad things about us. And he was like, I assume. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, so he did that for a while. And his, like, third cousin once removed, Winston Churchill, I don't think ever forgave him.
Okay.
All right, just a little digression. Were you aware of this?
No, that took a dark turn.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You know, what I know of Worcester and Jeeves, which is just the show with Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry.
Shout out to Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry.
Well, I feel like Hugh Laurie, well, not Hugh Laurie, but Stephen Fry maybe has said some things. I don't know. We'd have to fact check that.
Are you sure you're not confusing him with John Cleese?
I am sure that I'm not confusing him with John Cleese.
Okay.
And furthermore, how dare you, sir?
Okay. I retract that as we head to redacted.
I mean, has he ever actually played Oscar Wilde in something?
Oh, he might have.
Did you know that Oscar Wilde, like, I mean, he is a pretty imposing, larger-than-life kind of character.
Yeah.
As a person.
Yes.
If people were getting rowdy or whatever in the club.
Yeah.
And he was wanted this to stop, he would just stand up. And he was, like, very, very tall, and so he would just tower over somebody, and they would usually meekly leave. I mean, he was also a gay man. He had, you know, various torrid affairs, usually with younger men. And, you know, was eventually...
Jailed.
Jailed,
yeah.
And I think put on hormones.
Right.
As was the custom at the time. I mean,
right.
He was Irish, obviously, but I think he was living in England.
Yeah.
And that was the English way. Same thing.
Who was the guy that...
Alan Turing.
Alan Turing, yes.
Also happened to Alan Turing.
Right.
And when he was put on trial and imprisoned and sort of sentenced in this way... Bram Stoker, author of...
Dracula?
Correct. Who was also gay.
Oh.
Wrote Dracula partially as a response to his friend Oscar Wilde being jailed and, like, imprisoned in that way because he didn't speak up for him and he felt bad that he hadn't. And
wait, who didn't speak...
Bram Stoker didn't speak up for Oscar Wilde.
And he felt bad, so he wrote Dracula?
That is one of the things
behind
Dracula.
Well, I can't follow the emotional thread logic of that.
A big theme in Dracula... I mean, first of all, it is a very homoerotic novel in many ways. But also a big part of the fear of the other when it comes to the humans fearing Dracula is the fear that he will pass among them unnoticed, that he will be able to adopt their mannerisms so well that he can hunt among them without being detected. And there's a xenophobic aspect to it of the foreigner passing. But if you know that Bram Stoker was gay and also very private about being gay and had this sort of... recognition about his own privateness,
and felt,
you know,
guilty.
Well, he felt guilty, but he also felt that there was something something worth being expounded upon. I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say. There was the condition of being gay but privately led to all these other, like, small branching neuroses that he was very deeply aware of and encoded into his writing.
So he was working it out with the vampire stuff.
Well, I think he was also just putting it out there in a way that the public would accept.
Right.
Because he didn't write these characters as gay.
Right.
But in calling attention to this... feeling of, I can't, like, I'm a monster because I pass in society as straight. And other people hunt down people like me, you know?
Right.
For existing.
Wow.
And so for thinking that I prey on other people.
So this is sort of a monster-centric view of the world from the point of view of the monster.
I mean, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
How, like, horror is like a queer genre, you know? Horror wouldn't exist as it does without queer people. And queer people, historically, have seen themselves represented in the monsters in horror.
Uh-huh.
It's a big thing in the trans community. I feel like I mostly see trans femmes talking about it. It's a big thing. I have a whole... My whole thing, like, all werewolves are trans, like, thing. I mentioned that offhand to a friend when I was on the phone with her. And she was like, hold on, what? And I was like, oh, I haven't told you my werewolves are trans thing? I was like, obviously the transition, the, like, human to wolf, like, whatever, you know, we get that. That's it at its most basic, right? But on the other hand, the, like... Not a human, not a wolf, but, like, a third thing, which is, like, a werewolf. It's, like, not, you know, not a man, not a woman, but a third thing. And that third thing could be non-binary. It could be, like, a trans man, trans woman, whatever. It's, like, but that's essential to the identity for many trans people is the transness, the right. part of it.
The
it's not, like...
third thingness.
I know people who are, like, I've transitioned to being a cis woman, basically. And it's, like, you know, that's great for you. That's just not how a lot of people that I know identify.
Right.
And so it's, like, that. It's, like, well, what are you when the moon's not out and you look like a human? It's, like, I'm still a werewolf. And it's, like, well, what are you when you look like a wolf? It's, like, I'm a werewolf, you know? It's not, like, oh, well, I'm perceiving you as a woman... And so you're a woman. It's like, no, I'm always non-binary.
Right.
No matter what.
Right.
I just look different or
so,
whatever.
So there's a lot to unpack when you simply say, you summarize it by saying all werewolves are trans.
Well, all werewolves...
Thank you for expounding.
Well, all werewolves are trans because the cis people can't have that one. Sorry.
Right.
That one's for us. But, you know, the...
Right.
The rest of that I said to my friend when I was talking about this was seeing yourself in the monster, seeing the way other people react to the monster simply because of what it is or what it looks like or how they initially perceive it or, you know, whatever, or because they perceive themselves to be in danger when it's around, whatever. It's like that and also... The sort of grotesque finding identity within something that is so outside of conventional beauty standards that it is, like, you know, repellent to other people, but being like, actually, I do feel that way about myself and in relation to other people, and taking ownership of that and... even finding comfort in it and not being like this is a rod to beat myself with, but
right.
instead
it being like expresses
this is my lived experience.
It expresses you and your community and you have that in common.
Yeah, just being like this is a narrative that I can really get behind.
Mm-hmm.
And even the fact that those narratives often center around the monster or the horror being hunted, you know, or sometimes hunting the other people, but still it's depicted as evil or whatever. A lot of people see themselves sort of represented in society that way anyway. They're like, this is the niche in which other people see me. And so this is the narrative that I think applies to me the most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Cool. Interesting. Are X-Men in the Marvel universe?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Well,
but
let's
I'm so excited to hear you talk about X-Men. Well, please continue.
Well, okay. So everything you just said about all werewolves and trans and all that
makes me want to ask, what would be your favorite X-Men, or the trans community, if you want to speak for everyone?
Oh, Mystique. 100,000% Mystique.
Well, okay, so I don't know Mystique.
Oh, so Mystique is a shapeshifter. She can make herself look like anyone, anything, and in fact, she has a son whom she fathered.
That's complicated.
Yeah.
So here I want to jump in with a prompt question. So, getting back to otherness more broadly, I wonder if either you or I would care to share moments when we felt particularly other, you know, out of sync with people around us, or sort of rejected.
I'm deeply curious what you would say.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm an autistic, you know, trans, poly, double humanities major, you know.
That's interesting, the last thing that you threw in. Right.
What other do you? You said there were jocks and nerds. And
well, okay, all right. So, I mean, I think I immediately gravitate towards, I don't know if there was a specific incident. I'll try to think of one. But the definitely strong memories of a definite vibe when I was, you know, kind of an adolescent, middle school as much as high school, maybe even more so than high school, of just feeling like the ugly duckling, you know, the just the freak. And it wasn't that I was in a, you know, affiliated definitely with any group or anything that was really on the outs with the mainstream, you know, the strangers, whatever, queerness, but just feeling like a fish out of water, or an ugly duckling, or a little of both. A fish duckling, which, you know, that's difficult when you're an adolescent.
An ugly fish out of water.
Yeah, exactly. There's a picture, actually, that I suppose I could put in the show notes of me on the probably ninth grade Benjamin Franklin Junior High School soccer team. And we're all up there in the bleachers, and it's the team photo. We have our little sort of modest uniforms. I mean, they were nothing to write home about. And I'm sitting there trying so desperately to look handsome that you could see in the photo that I managed to achieve the exact opposite. It's just like, I mean, I can see it. I don't know if anyone else. So all the other people are looking either gobsmacked and clueless, or happy and smiling, and it's like a photo. And Steve is like trying to lay down something impressive, probably to impress girls, which was not a thing that happened. And the look is just like, yeah, it just captures, when I look at it, it's like I remember how I was feeling. And I feel like bad for that kid. I feel like, dude, just, you know what? Just let it go. Just be you. Don't try. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I think that kind of feeling of insecurity, body insecurity, and just personhood insecurity, you're not the superhero that you want to be. That feeling, even though you are, because listeners, you are loved and what?
Held,
exactly. And right, but, you know, so that's the thing. I think that's, if not, it's pretty universal. I was surprised to find in, you know, somewhat later life, it's like, oh, I mean, even Timmy Marks, who was like, you know, the golden boy.
The it boy.
Oh, man. Yeah, he was like manly. And the girls loved that, loved the shit out of that guy.
Well, yeah. You and I have talked about this before. I mean, before I even realized that I was autistic, I was telling you and Mom, sometimes when I'm in a conversation with somebody, especially in, like, work, when I was at work in a work environment, I would feel like there was a barrier between me and them where I was not able to show them my authentic self.
Right. You've mentioned that.
Yes. And that was masking, I realized later. That was me trying to present to somebody whatever was, you know, needed in the moment, not realizing that, first of all, that's not a normal feeling for people to have during a conversation. And second of all, that, like, that meant that I was autistic. And I relate to your story of being like, I'm trying to present the thing that I think I should be right now, and I literally feel like it's impossible.
And not only that, the harder I tried, the farther I got from my goal.
Yes. The less normal
you seem. It just feels like that photo is the distillation of my adolescent insecurity. So you felt that way a bit at work.
Yeah. I mean, I felt that way. Oh my God. In school, like, there were periods where I had, like, no friends, and I always knew I was the weird kid. I got called sensitive by teachers, which was bad teaching. Like, by the way, Mrs. Bradshaw, I have not forgiven you for that.
Why? Because you get labeled and, like, everybody's like, oh.
No, because I was sensitive. Oh, why the fuck would you say that to me?
I mean, was it said in a complimentary way? Or?
No. It was not.
Yeah. My father used to say I was too sensitive.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm not. It doesn't bother me now.
No.
It's like, oh, man, that's okay. You know, I can be sensitive. I mean, yeah. Lately, I think that's probably, I don't know. Is that still true? Whatever. I'll work that out on my own.
Work that out in post.
Yeah, whatever. You know, listeners, you don't need to hear me sit here wondering and not saying anything about am I too sensitive. It's a little narcissistic, first of all.
You could just leave the recording on the drive home, and then and there's, like, moments where there's, like, an amused breath of laughter or, like, a sorrowful kind of
sigh. Or sobbing.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're getting very close to our destination today.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like we've quite nailed the deeper, you know, pulling it all together. So feel free.
Me? I think that we have. I think we definitely have.
Okay.
And
how have I, what have I missed then? Just remind me. I mean, I know.
Like, otherness in, like, media and in our lives and, you know, I don't know. I just enjoyed kind of ranting about X-Men a little bit.
Okay.
I like X-Men.
All right, then.
I'm a fan now that Phoenix has converted.
Converted to X-Men.
It's converted to X-Men.
So like, the nice thing about all that is owning your otherness and not running away from it and finding others who you can share your otherness with.
Yeah. Okay. So there is a thing that I wanted to say.
Okay.
So Phoenix and I have been watching Drag Race recently, which is a competition for drag queens, if you're not familiar.
Okay.
That was for you, not our listeners. I assume everybody else on the planet knows what Drag Race is at this point. On the show, second to last episode before the finale, or, like, you know, the penultimate episode in each season, they will bring out photos of each of their remaining drag queens in the competition from when they were, like, you know, children, like 4 years old or so. And they'll ask them, if you could talk to your, like, 4-year-old self now, what would you say to little, and then they'll say their, like, real government name, which is a little cringy as a trans person, because I'm like, why are you dead naming them? But it's, of course, probably the name that they use in their regular life. Because they're performers and not all of them are trans. Mm-hmm. But anyway, and this is always the part that makes me break down and cry. Because usually at least one of them will break down and cry. Sometimes all of them do, which is always crazy. But I'm always thinking about what I would say to my younger self. And, you know, I, right now in my life, am blessed with, like, enormous self-confidence and, like, self, permanence of self, basically, Like, I know exactly who I am, I like myself, and I feel comfortable going out into the world as myself and not second-guessing how other people are going to perceive me. And that was something I never thought was going to be possible for me when I was younger. I felt riddled with self-doubt and insecurity, and it turns out that all of the things that I was insecure about and felt self-doubt about are the things that make me so confident now. My strengths at, socializing with people, my ability to internalize the nice things that people say about me and just not only know that that's how other people perceive me, but believe them about myself, that I'm, you know, loved and held by the people in my life. I think that, I would tell myself all those things that make you really weird, you know, those are the things that make you special, and you are gonna, like, all of those cheesy aphorisms that are like, you attract what you put out into the world, are completely true. It's like, you're gonna make weird art that you're really proud of, and you're gonna attract a lot of weird people who love having you in their lives, and people enjoy having you around, and so if you literally just reach out and ask, you know, they will say yes, or even if they don't say yes that time, they'll say yes next time. Like, you know, rejection is not a big deal. Just put yourself out there, and, like, all that cheesy stuff, it's real. Like, and all of those things that made me so sensitive also make me a really great friend and make me, like, a really great person who I really enjoy being in this world. And as somebody who was not sure they were going to live to be 18, you know, that would have been major for me to hear.
Wow. I got to say, first of all, you did pull it all together now that we're here. Unbelievable.
That was a Z-snap.
Okay. Thank you for the Z-snap. Just as all zeros are potentially ones, your otherness is your strength, and that is awesome. And I also, I'll say what I know my mother would say if and when she hears this,
mm-hmm.
about your feeling confident, etc. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So your sign off?
We have to get out of here so this person can move.
Sign off?
Sorry, we'll be out of here in a second.
Sign off?
I love you. Get home safe.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.
Bye. See ya.